This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined again this morning by Superintendent Charles Oskey. Good morning, Charles. How nice to see you.
Good morning. Good morning, Kate. Yep. Excited to be here again on this windy day.
It's very windy, isn't it? Yes, indeed. Yes, one of the things that has happened since we last sat down and spoke has been that the legislative session has been through all its business and has wrapped up, and now we're just letting the dust settle. And before it began, you and I talked quite a bit, and there were a lot of bills and a lot of legislation that was coming forward about education. And I'd like to just take a minute to look back and see what actually happened as the session went along. It was an unusual session. There was a tremendous amount of legislation before both Senate and House. And there was a lot of, I think, what could be described as lively debate. There were some things that you were watching in particular, and a key one was the funding for the KC school boiler, because without that funding, and it was had a pretty substantial $4 million price tag attached to it, the school couldn't stay open. So did that get through?
Yeah, from our understanding, because it's very complex where the money actually landed and which bill, but it's through the governor. So yes, so I'm 99.9% sure that the funding went through. We're actually going down. John Zink and I are headed down next Thursday, actually, to a state meeting and talk about some of that. So, yes. And it's a celebration because I've talked about this many times, is this was a journey to get some of our major projects, which KC's become the number one priority, into this component. You hear me say all the time, the pipeline. So this pipeline of having the state help us maintain our facilities so that we can keep our facilities open is exciting. So this is one of many. Once we get through this journey, then we'll be hopefully be back in the pipeline with several other projects and getting our facilities kind of up to speed, which started with that evaluation we did 3 years ago. So
in the midst of all of this, in February, there was a decision made by a judge about the lawsuit, as it's called.
Yes.
It's called the lawsuit. I've heard it referred to that many times. And this was when the WEA, the Wyoming Education Association, brought a case against the state, basically saying that education had not been appropriately funded. And a judge ruled in favour of the WEA and agreed that there was underfunding. There was insufficient inflation adjustment, inadequate salary, insufficient support services. To go back to the point about the KC boiler, insufficient facility maintenance funding. So that case has now been adjudicated by the judge in favour of the plaintiffs. What does that mean for Johnson County School District now?
Well, it means that there's good news, and then there's the conversation that we need to have. Sorry. So yeah, no, it's exciting. It's unconstitutional is kind of some references that are there, but now legislators are, where are they going to find the money? What is that appropriate level for education? So this is the next thing that kind of leads into, it's kind of staged out. So now we're going to head into recalibration this summer and determine that funding model that actually generates, and I call it a funding model, but I should call it a funding formula, that actually puts all the components in together and said this is the amount of money that it should take to fund educationally appropriate in the state of Wyoming. So that's the next stage. So is there a celebration? Yes. But in the reality, it's not over yet. the state can decide to appeal. We can see where recalibration goes. Does this lawsuit bring a whole pile of new money to the school district for next year's funding? The answer is no. That's just a part of where the state's going to have to land on where they're going to get the money to funding all these priorities that came out of this lawsuit, which, as you know, right now with this current legislation, and you mentioned at the very beginning of this interview, is this legislation was a little different, unique in cutting taxes, not backfilling some of those things. So now this lawsuit has come out. That's a very expensive bill that is going to be put on the legislators' plates on how they're going to fund this according to what came out with this legal case. So I have some concerns with that. As a superintendent, we always want to make sure our districts are functioning and living within our means. But when we're cutting taxes and school districts are the number one priority according to the laws to fund, that could end up taking away from our communities, which could cause a divide between school districts and our communities when certain resources are taken away to fund schools. So it's kind of a tricky, in my opinion, to navigate some more of that. You'll see that's why I've always emphasized we've got to be united as a community as we move through some of these. So is it a win? Yes. Is it an opportunity to reflect on how we fund school districts? Absolutely, which will take place during the summer and recalibration. And then where's the funding going to come from? And that's going to bring another debate down the road too.
So I'd like to come back and talk about property tax in a moment, but maybe you'll just explain what recalibration is for those people who are not familiar.
Yeah, so recalibration part of the law is every 5 years, it's been part of the process that the state comes together with school districts and they look at how the funding model produces funding. So the formulas that generate funds, is it generating the appropriate amount for school districts to function and offer? What intentionally the lawsuit was against is we're not funding schools appropriately so they can meet the needs of kids. So this kind of does align with this legislation. So we're going to come in and we're going to talk about the formulas that generate funds for school districts. Well, for example, food service will come. I'm just use that as a classic example. There's no funding in the model for food service. However, with this legislative, with this judge's decision, it says we need to fund that. So that'll be a new component to that. And then they'll come back to their like four or five key components that we need to watch. Class size is one of them. We've been very fortunate in the state of Wyoming that class sizes determine the funding. So it's either a one teacher over every 16 kids or it's a 1 to 25. Well, if you look at go back to 2020 and look into some of that documentation, it does say there that the experts, Pikus and Auden, recommendation is for grades 4 through 12 is a 1 to 25 model, which reduces the number of teachers, but that you increase the base pay. So again, it's a balancing act. So class sizes will be one. We are the only state in the nation with public funds, with our state funds, that actually funds special ed at 100%. I think we're one of the only states in the nation that funds transportation at 100%. We've got some other components that we need to look at. So those will all be values that come to the table when it does that. And then I think we're pretty unique in the state of Wyoming that just some states fund activities at a certain level, but I would say that we're probably one of the few states that funds activities at the highest, that at a level that we fund it at. So those will probably be categories that will come up during recalibration when when we start talking about are we providing funding for the actual needs of our academic, educational needs of our kids. Those are components we'll need to look at.
There is a lot of focus at the moment on whether funding is appropriately allocated, whether the right kind of amounts are going to the right kind of entities, and how that money is spent. There are many people who believe that there is too much money spent on education in Wyoming. Do you have a response to that? I know that you struggle to make ends meet. I know that that is a struggle from your point of view, but is there slack in the system?
I think we can always look for efficiencies. You've known that since I've been in this position, is trying to find efficiencies and living within our means. Are there certain things that are critical? Absolutely. Are there certain things that we consider that we probably do in public education in general are just are good for kids? It's good for our communities, but it does tie back to academics. Yes.
Could you give some examples just so that people could get an idea of things?
For the reality for me is if we're talking about instructional, that's those core teachers in the classrooms, making sure we fund that. But we also have to remember we have to maintain our facility and our classified staff are critical. So from our transportation to our groundskeepers to our building facilities, we always want our facilities to be top-notch. And if you drive around the state of Wyoming, most of our facilities are pretty top-notch compared to other states. So that's one thing the state of Wyoming does do. And that's some things that when we maintain those buildings, adds to that cost per student. When you talk about transportation and even the special ed portion of things, is there's a lot of people that come to Wyoming because we fund special education and their kids get the best services they've seen from other states. So again, that's a cost per student type of thing that we look at. Activities are the heart of our community, and I believe in activities sometimes are the key component to why kids are in public school. But there's a cost to that. We're just having the conversation, $50,000 to $70,000 to put shot clocks just for one sport in all gyms, and then you have to maintain that piece. Well, again, where does that funding come from? Whether it's donations we look for, but again, in general, it comes from us. And then the key component behind that is after they're put in, moving forward, you have to pay somebody to run those at every event, at every game throughout. So those are costs that are probably not seen in some other states throughout this. But can we be, we can always be more efficient. But I also want to bring back this economy of scale. The state of Wyoming, when you look at different things, we are unique in what that looks like. We also have
how
some...
So?
Economy of scale is we're just a very rural state.
So our large land mass compared to our small
communities. So when you look at that, we used to be almost 93,000 students in the state of Wyoming. We're down to about 89,000. So we're already down. But you spread that out over this large, vast, amazing state of Wyoming, that is a very remote type of communities through the state of Wyoming. We all know that when we travel, we don't travel 10 minutes to go somewhere in Wyoming. We travel an hour, 4 hours, 5 hours to go to some of those services. So that's unique, which adds to some of that piece. But the reality is Wyoming has also set the bar pretty high for what we do with our standards and our expectations of what they look like. And when you look at state assessments, I would say our state assessment is probably one of the tougher ones in the region. So it's hard to compare apples to apples when you're talking about different things, state assessments, how students are performing. We're the state that requires, one of a few states that requires every junior to take the ACT. So when we shift this all down, when we ask the question, the cost per student, or where we're at, is we need to also ask the question, what are other states not providing or not doing? Are they, you know, is there been a huge focus on CTE programs? But then we come back to some of what our graduation rates are. Why are our graduations where they're at? Is it because we do have a high set of expectations for kids, which comes back to the purpose, I think, in all honesty, of why we're doing the profile of a graduate. Really reevaluating, do our set of expectations of what kids graduate with a high school diploma, are they really meeting the needs of kids? And I think most of that survey over the last 2 years, there was some dissatisfaction with kind of what was expected to get a high school diploma. So hence that project is moving forward too. So
I think that there's a backdrop of a lot of conversation, especially amongst high school students and their families, as to, you know, whether college is worth it these days, whether the expense of college is worth it, especially in a world which is rapidly changing due to AI, and that is going to change our world of work as well. How is education going to respond to that?
We just had this conversation with the newspaper, so. The new normal. We're still finding that new normal in public education. We're not the only show in town. So now AI adds to that extraordinary piece of it. Public education has with public funds, we have a lot of responsibility to make kids are safe and secure. And that means even in the tech world, where those are costs that you don't see in some of these other entities that we take a lot of pride in. So there's a cost to that piece too. So overall, in general, the new normal is we're realizing what that needs to be. And for me is we're not the only show in town.
And that is actually underscored by a piece of legislation too,
yes.
The Steamboat Legacy Scholarship Act, which gives homeschool parents $7,000 per child per year from K through 12 for costs associated with tuition and tutoring and so on. I mean, that could be argued to incentivize people to not send their kids to public school. That changes the landscape for public schools.
Absolutely, it does. And, you know, with the dismantle or the attempted dismantle of our K-12 educational system at the federal level.
Yes, so there is conversation about either dramatically downsizing or abolishing completely
the
Department of Ed. What impact would that have?
Well, depending on whether they're just dismantling and finding out just efficiencies or whether they're getting cut off funding are two different scenarios. For me, my understanding is now they're just going to push it back to the funding will go directly to the state and the Department of Education and the cost of doing that. So I don't think it's going to have a big impact. But right now, there's nobody that I really know that understands where this is going to land in the next 5 to 6 months. For us, that would be huge. We have Title I, we have Title II, we have special ed, we have Title IV. All those funds put together with special ed and all that well exceeds over $500,000 that we use in our district just to support kids and employees. So that would be devastating if that kind of stuff doesn't come to the table. Am I overly concerned right now? No. But if they do what they promised and the money still comes to the state and the state actually allocates this to us as a district, I'm good with that. But there's some stops in there that we need to make sure that funding continues to us as a school and down to kids.
So Johnson County School District is subject to following Wyoming law on education. Are there federal laws that you also are required to follow?
Yes. So when we say federal laws, and that's a great question, Kate. This dismantle of the Wyoming Department of Ed doesn't change the federal laws. It's just changing a mechanism that used to distribute monies to meet the federal laws. So federal laws, especially for special ed, for some of your at-risk and some of those things, all those laws still apply. The Department of Ed, who was supposed to be supervising that and delegating funds towards those different states based on numbers, is where that impact is. But we will still have to meet the federal laws related to special ed with compliance with ADA, all of that stuff that aligns with that, which, again, complying with those, the State Department will have to confirm we're doing what we should do in order to spend those federal funds correctly.
So I mentioned property tax and how I'd like to come back to that. The legislature passed a 25% reduction in residential property taxes. Those residential property taxes, in part, subsidize a whole range of services in our community, and in part of that, the Johnson County School District too. How do you anticipate this hitting the school district's budget? And what adjustments do you think you might need to make?
Well, it's not going to hit our budget yet because by state statute, they have to fund this according to the model.
And education is unique in that, isn't it?
Absolutely. So that's one unique thing about the state of Wyoming. However, the concern comes with me is with no backfill, that means that those revenues, that savings account will go dry very quickly.
So backfill being that there's no other money coming from anywhere else to fill up the shortfall.
So they'll take it out
tax.
Of savings, which again comes back to recalibration this summer, where they'll be looking for what do we actually have to provide funding for. And those categories I talked about earlier, whether it's special ed, whether it's transportation, whether it's activities, all those different types of things will come back to the discussion plate of that's how they will find efficiencies. And then they have a responsibility to put the funding towards education first. So,
do you anticipate a need to adjust staffing, resources, programs, whatever? I mean, you anticipate...
I am going to be as transparent in saying... There's 48 school districts in the state of Wyoming that need to start looking at having that flexibility with master schedules and what you're doing with staffing. It is. You have federal dismantle of the State Department of Education, federal Department of Education. You have what's going on in our legislation. You also have a reduction. You know, our community is changing. 50% of us are, myself and a few others, 50% of us are over the age of 50.
Mm-hmm. We do have an older population in Jersey County with less kids who are even eligible to go to school in any form.
Yes, and then you throw the other category over here where you have homeschool, charter schools, and a different avenue of school of choice, and now we're not the only show in town, which we say. These are unprecedented times that public education's never or communities have had to deal with. And then you throw AI on top of that, and then you throw the people that just think it's really super awesome to hack into our systems and do cyber, you know, cyber bullying is what I would call it in some cases. Yeah. Those all parallel. So there's a lot of wheels in motion that are headed in one direction. And to manage that, not only as a school board, but as a superintendent and as a community, we have to work together. Otherwise, it could really separate a lot of communities around the state of Wyoming.
That's a tremendous amount of challenge and newness, for especially for a system which is not known for being flexible and flight afoot. I mean, the amount of bureaucracy
absolutely
that is tied up in education.
Absolutely. Appreciate the honesty. Public education has demonstrated time and time again that it does not flip on a dime. It is a big, massive ship, which to turn it with perceptions of this is how we've done it for 30 years, what's wrong with how we do it here, the accountability just even in the last 4 years since I've been at Johnson County has significantly went up for public schools and how we spend funds. So the scrutiny behind what we do and how we do things you know what? I hate the word blitz audit. No longer will have to use the word COVID funds, which is super excited, which brings its own audit. But that accountability is there, and that's a real piece that most people don't get to see.
The challenge is for, you know, a new one for public education, which is to persuade parents that they should educate their children in the public school setting. What are you going to do to respond to that? That's almost a marketing call. What is going to happen?
So, again, a reevaluation of our communication. We did that audit piece. We're trying to change some of those. We've got to do a better job of communicating. I think we do a good job, but we got to do a better job. We got to start reaching out to our community. You'll see one of the initiatives that we would like to do next year is actually that service back to our community, not paid, not we're doing a fundraiser or anything like that, but bringing back the whole thought as a community service, kids and teachers, the whole district giving back to a community that's always giving to public education, but then not doing a handout, you know, saying, hey, I want to come do this, but can you pay me to do that? Is like, this community is always given to public education. That's another connective point that I think is critical with us as a school district. Could be as simple as what I started 2 years ago with being just involved in the Johnson County Parade. That's the World's Fair. If nobody gets it, everybody in Johnson County shows up to the World's Fair. And they show up to the parade, just being involved. But cell phones, we haven't even gone down the road of how cell phones have changed our world.
No. But I think there's another point of view, which is, what does the school district, what does public education across Wyoming, not necessarily just here, what do you understand about why, what are the reasons, and there are probably a range of different reasons, why parents do not choose the public school system? And what can you do to either reassure them that their understanding is maybe wrong, and that that's not something that happens in the school district, or to meet them somewhere and their needs to reassure them that the public education system is actually going to give their child the best education possible?
What are we going to do? We're going to continue our journey of the research shows that in-person social skills and dealing with people in person is probably the most mental and safe place for kids to be rather than to being online. And when you're online, is having those security barriers around what kids have access to, or more importantly, who has access to your kids through technology. So those will be some big things that we do. But that social skill of one-on-one, it's already been proven. We've seen that with the anxious generation, too much technology. We're always hearing people say that, you know, we're losing our ability to socialize individually, one-on-one in front of people. Those are some of the things that we really need to do.
That's one argument against, just homeschooling, your one or two children, mm-hmm. at the kitchen table on a regular basis and delivering a curriculum to them. That doesn't necessarily put a public school, that puts you head-to-head with a charter school, and there are now no limit on charter schools. How are you going to respond to the competition that a charter school presents to the public system?
Again, we have to become the best salesman of our product. It's just as an example, Ford, Dodge, GMC, Chevrolet, they all have their own products, and who wants to buy it comes based on sometimes tradition. Our family's only ran GMCs. Well, again, I've only ran Fords. Everybody has that preference. So it really comes back to, we're going to be based on, some families are going to base it on their experience going through public school, and we need to come back to, we want all students to thrive. We want them to remember their experience, but the success, the real world is the hardest thing. Once you get out into the real world, it's not easy. And that accountability piece of what that looks like is probably another reality of the work we're doing with Two Revs that Mr. Evans was shared in college, and the Governor's Ride and all of that we're putting together is really tying our kids to that workforce to understand what the real world's like. Which, when I was going to school, we have on the job where you could go do some of that, but it was never at the level that we have now. And frankly, the honesty about it is not every kid is a 4-year college-bound kid. They're career tech kids,
and
getting them ready.
And in the new world that is opening up with AI, that is an even more pertinent part of a conversation.
Yes.
What is AI going to change in terms of our workforce, and how well would an expensive 4-year degree or more mm-hmm. cost you and set you up well for that? Those are all challenges.
Yep.
Too. So shifting gears a little bit, there was a lot of conversation about this, and I think a lot of disquiet too, but the legislation has now changed, and starting on July the 1st, we're going to end the gun-free zones in schools, other public buildings too, but schools is the topic of the conversation right now. How do you respond to that? We knew it was coming. It's not unexpected. I know that there was disquiet in a number of areas. Many students have expressed concern about it. What do you need to do now to respond to this new piece of legislation? What do you need? A new policy? What will happen? What are the implications of this? What do you want people to know when they start walking onto school property from July the 1st?
Well, I'm going to start out with this phrase, so everybody hears this phrase first of all. So we've already met with our local law enforcement in Tucker Ruby, and I've already...
Who's county attorney, for those who don't know.
in that process, and I've told the board this too. My intention is to continue to do what's best for our kids and truly outline kids and the community with this new bill.
And what does that mean? Because that, I think everybody could say, I'm going to do the best for kids, but the interpretation could be very different.
The interpretation of the rules based on where we are and what we have to do is, I don't want this rule to create a unsafe environment where teachers don't want to come to work, where kids don't feel safe. And that interpretation of what we can actually do and do, can and can't do with this bill is where we're at, which comes back to your original question is, what kind of policy? Yeah, we've got to revisit. Do we want to revisit policy? However, if we create what some districts have now, where there's an enhanced concealed carry just for teachers, and we go through all this training, that's a violation of the law, because any adult, which is a teacher that's teaching in a classroom, shouldn't have to go through the training to have carry it concealed. So there's a liability on that piece. And then when you do the training, if the training's not done right, that becomes a liability. So if you don't create a policy and somebody does carry, then does that liability of that individual fall with them as an individual because they chose to do that at this time? So you have that camp over here, and that's kind of the camp I'm in. I want to know what's best for our district. Well, first of all, I can't be in lawsuit after lawsuit and afford a lawsuit. I want to make sure our kids and our staff are safe. My biggest point of this is it's not about during school hours. The reality is we have ricotta, we have lockdown doors, we have finding that balance that, you know, we still want our community to be involved in our kids 8 to 4. A lot of this huge impact are some of the things we don't control. That fears me the most with concealed carries on public. So that's your after school events, activity events, all those type of things,
so
when the doors are open.
So why do you think, I think there's an understanding, and maybe it's an incorrect one, that this change to the legislation came in so that there can be a better response should there be a shooting of some sort or an incident of some sort involving firearms, that there are firearms in the school that can then be used against a perpetrator.
Absolutely disagree with that, okay, that statement for this reason. Law enforcement is highly trained. They train in high stressful situations. It's the difference between being a carrier and actually using it effectively. When you have law enforcement, the average stat is anywhere 15 to 20% or even less than that actually hit the target in a very intense situation.
But the argument being that there's somebody there immediately, the minute something happens, there's an incident, there's potentially somebody who can respond.
And the reality is, I'll come back to this again too, that person's at the other end of the building. Most of these incidents take place in 2 to 3 minutes. It's over. That's to say that that person's going to be right there on the spot where the situation is actually happening is very minimal. It creates another level of concern when law enforcement does get on site, which is a 2 to 3 minute response, and they're coming into the building. They're coming in. They need to go home to their family, so they have protocol and things of that nature too. So to say that just by having concealed weapons, there's going to be somebody right on the spot that's going to be able to respond to that scenario, based in a district, 55, 60,000 square feet of facilities, can be a misperception too. But again, it comes back to that training piece. We might have people or somebody might be in that position, but do they have the skill set and the amount of training to actually do what needs to be done at the time without impacting others?
Regardless, we're going to have a situation where come next fall at any football game, any basketball game, any volleyball game,
yes,
any whatever, you could have a whole number of people sitting packing in an arena or in a gymnasium. What is the school district going to do? What are you going to say? What is the response?
That's the other training on how we're going to respond to that, because again, by state statute, they have the right to be there. So that means involving law enforcement if it becomes a heated topic or it becomes a threat or it's disrupting the educational environment or the setting, then obviously we're going to ask that situation to, we're going to have to find a way to de-escalate it in such a way and move it a different direction. So it does create a whole nother level of conversation of how we respond to situations that, here's that new normal again. This is something that public education hasn't dealt with. I have not had an opportunity to deal with this in 36 years of education because it's just been common knowledge that this isn't a place.
So presumably this does open up conversation with teachers and other staff about what they should be doing. Does it opens up the conversation again about, you know, guns in classrooms and so on. Do you have a system? Have you got a plan in mind for how you're going to have those conversations and how you're going to end up at some kind of decision?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you volunteering before the interview to help lead this.
I don't remember that, Charles.
we're going to have to get together. Again, you're going to see the ball roll pretty quickly, kind of after we get some feedback from state legal counsel on what the law actually says and what we're required to do in our options, which will mean, again, probably another survey to the community, another survey to the staff, and then the board will have some hard decisions on what to make. And me as a superintendent, what I recommend to the board, if there is going to be policy change, And if we're going to change policy, what is the ripple effect for that? What does it mean for our insurance, our cost of insurance? What kind of training do we have in place?
So can you explain why the cost of insurance might change?
Because there is a liability when we as a school district start providing the training for these type of situations. And just like anything else, now that this is new territory in the state of Wyoming, now there's a higher risk of, you know, an incident and lawsuits happening. So that does impact insurance. So they have to have a formula of saying, look, there's a higher risk of a situation where there's legal action going to take place against the district. And so we have to financially put ourselves in a situation to be able to address that. So it does tie back to insurance. We do live in a world of lawsuits. We do live in a world of accountability. And that's why insurance is involved in that.
And indeed, that ties us back into the beginning of our conversation, which is about funding and, you know, just making all the money go round. Charles, thank you for this conversation and for giving us such a bird's eye view of all the different challenges that currently face education. It is not simple, and there are many things that are moving fast.
I just want to say I appreciate you because you asked some really great questions, and I think the community and the stakeholders need to know that those are challenges we face as a community, and I'm pretty sure I was pretty clear in saying there is no straightforward answer with some of those questions. Everything we talk about, whether it's funding or whether it's concealed carry, everything we talk about has an impact on our people and on our kids and on our community. And navigating that, those hard decisions of funding is going to get less.
It seems a bit like a Rubik's Cube. You get all the red up on one side and then you turn it over and you realize that the yellow that you had straight before is now all messed up.
Absolutely agree. What I thought I was solid with the night before when I went home and I woke up the next day and I come back to work and somebody has a different view or a different view has come back to play. There is a lot of... there are a lot of things that are very fluid, and to hit that target when things are moving is going to be hard. But even after we hit the target or we make a decision moving forward, I hope the community and the stakeholders know that doesn't mean that's the final answer. We're going to have to continue to adjust and make changes as we move forward year by year.
Well, thank you for the conversation. I'm sure there are many topics that we're going to be continuing to talk about for several months, but you're up against some deadlines and swift work is required, I believe.
Yeah, I wish that one law would have passed that there was now 24 months in a year, rather than 12, but we'll be okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Charles, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.